Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Judy. Now we've come to the third precept, the third grave precept. That always sounds too serious to me, so I like prohibitory better. That just says, okay, this is something that we should pay attention to, but it's not a life or death situation. and yet, of course, it is. So both are probably good. In Dido's book, he calls it honor the body, do not misuse sexuality. So he doesn't even give a positive side. the way we can, which means be generous, really, essentially, and how to do proper loving or something like that. We call it, in Koban's tradition, no sexual misconduct, which Koban called no scattered desiring, no wrong or scattered desiring. He said, there is only you and absolute being. So there is basic confusion in having two objects as the absolute. So Dido points out that it's very a misuse of anything is just our egotistical way of being. And that, as he says, it's not a rule that prohibits sexuality, it's a rule that admonishes boorish and manipulative behavior. Where sexuality is used solely for one's own pleasure and benefit with total disregard for the other person. We use sexuality to control people even without any physical contact when we flirt in order to get the things that we want to satisfy our own desires. We violate this precept. So he says, basically, it's about liking and disliking. One more dichotomy about I want this and I don't want that. And to find that balanced, centered way he says, everything in this whole universe is characterized by interdependent co-origination, i.e. everything is connected to everything else. We're already together. Can we grab onto anything to hold and control it? Not really. And yet we constantly struggle with likes and dislikes. Dogen said, when the three wheels are pure and clean, nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. The three wheels are body, thought, and words. The wheels are how we enact the life of us. Sexuality involves activity of body, words, and thoughts. All are fundamentally empty. That's the ultimate nature of reality. This is the same thing that Koban was saying. Yet we are blinded by illusory dualistic views that give rise to the persistent emotions of love and hate, clinging and rejection, all of which you can call desire. It is all like a dream. When one clearly verifies for oneself the nature of the self and the nature of all things, then the dualistic distinction between begins to dissolve, and love takes on a whole different meaning, one of no separation. Then the loving and sexual relationship between two consenting and caring people is the Dharma of unsurpassed enlightenment. It becomes a wonderful expression not only of human existence, but of the Buddha Dharma itself. The activity of Buddha, the movement of Buddha, the expression of Buddha. So every now and then someone will come to me in Doksan and say, if I take the precepts, do I have to give up sex? Feeling like getting all purified and perfect, and so you wouldn't do things like that. But no, that isn't what this is about at all. Akin Roshi has a very interesting discussion of what it's like to be in a monastery and how they're so busy, they keep the young men really, really busy so they can't get too involved with each other, which is mostly what they do if they exercise any sexuality at all. And none of it is serious, according to him. It's just a kind of exuberance, youthful exuberance. Because in Zen monasteries, you are sent there by usually your father, who is the head of a temple, and you're trained to take the temple. And so it's a very different kind of atmosphere from how we imagine it, of sitting, and everybody is really intent on enlightenment the way it was in Dogen's time. But no, they just hate sitting, and they swear they'll never sit when they get out of it. And they can't wait to get out of it. And then they go home and get married right away and have a family life at the temple. It's an odd system. It was a political decision that the government made back in the 1800s, I think, that they had to marry because the so-called church, I was going to say, the Sangha began to own too much property and do too much in politics, and so they broke them up and made them get married. It's a requirement now for most monks. They have to go back to the family temple or to teach in the big temple. So sexuality, even in the monastery, is not a question. You just can't wait to go find your bride and carry on with your life, raise a family. Akin calls it no unrighteous lewdness, no boorishness. And he says he looked and looked for a haiku or a story that told about sexuality all through the many, many different things you could look into. And there's just one story. Actually, there's two, and I didn't look it up. But the one that's most famous is the one that he cites, and it's about the old woman who has a beautiful, beautiful daughter. And a monk comes and asks if he can practice in the little hut in the back of the property. And she says, yes, of course you can. And so he does his retreat back there in the property. And years go by, and she wonders, I wonder how that guy is doing. And so she sends her daughter to talk to him. And they sit down and begin to talk, and then she puts her head in his lap. And he says, oh, forget about it. I'm just a dead tree. There is nothing left in me at all. I've completely dropped off everything. So she was very polite, and she said, oh, sorry, and went back and told her mom. And her mother was furious. She went and kicked the guy out and burned the hut down. She was really mad. So this is the Zen story about sexuality. You don't turn into a dead tree. It's not like that. In fact, the more we sit, the more embodied we become, and the more sensual or more connected with the life of the body as we sit. It's not a head trip anymore. It's about the whole thing. Living and breathing and touching and being touched. It's in Vajrayana practice, it's sacred. And for many people, it's sacred. So that's what I have. Aiken says, we must acknowledge sexual energy as part of the Sangha treasure. I like that. So, questions, comments, experiences.
So a week doesn't seem long enough to work on all of each of these.
It's true.
It seems like in each, well, I guess this is only the third one, but each time I kind of get to a point where I'm like, oh, it's another gate or another,
yeah.
You know, I sort of get to that. And so I had several thoughts along the way, and one message came to me from Pema Chodron a little bit. She had an interview with Bill Moyers, and she reminded that we shouldn't forget what it's like before we have any bit of awareness. Because then we are unable to relate to people and wherever they are. And that sort of struck me, because I keep thinking of these in terms of how is this change over the course of your life and how it was for me in my 20s versus my 30s and 40s. And just remembering such chaos, you know, as I was a grasping at, you know, and several unhealthy interactions where I wanted something, but I didn't necessarily want to give what was expected. And these, and thankfully the challenges are not raw in this way, but I was reminded to remember that, I guess, by Pema's words. And then, but the thing that struck me this week, because I feel like I am in a raw place, but it's more just keeping in touch with my emotions, and I realized, well, it occurs to me, or it doesn't seem to me, that in our routine practice, we don't really talk about the physical challenge of sitting, or just the challenges of being a physical person. And for me, the more I want to sit, or the more I want to calm my mind, the more I do need to move, almost like a counter pose. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I remember the first time I did a really intense yoga practice, and I was so amazed at how much love and just bliss I felt at the end of it. And I, you know, realizing that that's available to everyone, you know, just our body is another gate to that place. You know.
Beautifully said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Body is another gate. So did anybody else think about it this week?
I have something that I had to think about. A long, long time ago, I heard a talk by Katagiri Roshi. When I was a young woman, he was talking about how we shouldn't run away from our desires, how our desires are actually really important, they kind of they're powerful, and they can define us in a really positive way.
Yes.
And that had a lasting, you know, throughout my life. That was the first time I'd actually ever heard anyone say that. It is okay to feel,
yes,
passion and desire.
What and a gift.
It was. It was, uh-huh, a beautiful gift.
Huh.
But yet, when we chant the Bodhisattva vows, we say desires are inexhaustible.
Inexhaustible. We're going to end them.
I vow to end them. So how do we?
Well, I think it's talking about the boorish desires that she is talking about.
He wasn't talking about those.
No, he wasn't. It's just there's so many greedy, inappropriate, as you were describing, you know, we, especially in our youth, we just are so full of chemicals, really, in the body that are driving us in many different ways. So, of course, we go through lots of drama. And it's all about that kind of desire, that wanting this is good and that's bad, and, you know, I'm crazy about that person, but that person did something bad to me, and yeah, a lot of tears go into youth and sexuality, but a lot of joy too. It's just exuberant. And now there are all kinds of books and articles about how to renew this joy in your old age, which just seems amazing that they're trying to reconstitute our youthful sexuality as well as everything else. Get a facelift and a everything else.
Someone in the room should speak about the summer of love.
Oh, yes.
Some of us are old enough to remember such things. And the love and light period of our youth. And all the things that we learned going through that. So we stumble along one continuous mistake. Now at my age, I'm more comfortable with reading jokes about elderly sexuality than I am about exploring facelifts and other things. But, you know, all those things, I've reflected on my life and thought about all these things that have awakened something besides the scattering awareness or that scattering desire, that thing that pulled me this way or that way. I've been reflecting on before chemicals introduced themselves into my mind when I was a boy, and when not a girl but a baseball game had all my attention.
Yes.
You know, and how that is so true about chemicals and things like that. Like that awakening that, put me on a path. And we've all had that. That path, one kind or another.
Yeah.
Today, as I was taking a walk with my wife through our neighborhood down in Minnesota, there was an interesting set of signs in front of the Methodist church. Perhaps you've driven by it and seen it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it says what kind of people are welcomed at this church. And it has everyone. But there was one that I had never seen before, and I thought it was so fitting for a Zen practitioner. It was a non-binary person.
Yes.
Somebody who isn't...
Who's not
kind of,
split.
Not stuck, kind of split, but trying to be some, you know, be in that place where you could
you could be anything.
Everything.
Yes.
So the non-binary.
Oh, this is a whole new world.
But, you know, I think for especially my generation, and I'm speaking only for people my age, a lot of different experiences that steered me eventually in a direction that I could finally be comfortable in.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of manipulation, and a lot, I mean, I think of the cultural propaganda of my time period, the things that were being advertised and suggested and proposed, supposedly by people who knew. I mean, I think some people went through some very difficult experiences during that time period.
Absolutely.
You know, manipulated husbands manipulating wives, wives manipulating husbands, people who weren't interested in being husbands or wives manipulating others. When I think the history that I have of my 20s and 30s was, although there were time periods when I was married, but there were time periods when I wasn't, and just some of the things that was occurring during that time period are just, so great to have those things behind me, all in the rear mirror, and not anything that I'm having to deal with at this age. There are some real values to being my age, and I want to share that with my younger friends. So, at least from the time period that I, historically, that I grew up in.
Well, in my era, there were so many restrictions on your life that as you were growing up, you didn't know anything about sex at all. And so when you found out about it, you also found out about it in an era when suddenly it was starting to, all the restrictions were starting to break open and everything was okay. And it was very wild. It was even more wild later on when my kids were growing up and drugs came into the picture big time. So it got very, very messy, and sex was a very messy part of it. And there's an awful lot of hep C in people's bodies just because of the things that they were going on way back then. They're still having to live with it, and it's nasty stuff, and a lot of other things too. And the whole AIDS epidemic and the tragedy of that, all the young men who died, boom, 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 just like that, hundreds. Very, very sad. Steve?
I'd like to share a little bit. When you guys were talking about, you mentioned chemicals out. I wanted to ask if you were talking about natural brain chemicals or drugs and alcohol and other things.
No, I was thinking of what's going on inside our bodies.
I can just say that drugs and alcohol were definitely a part of my youth. So glad I'm not in that time of my life anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not quite old enough to have been in the summer of love, or whatever you call it. But, it definitely puts some dot to it. It's just all I can think of to share right now. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Judy?
This precept also made me think about how many laws there are around the workplace, around using sexuality.
Yes.
So brought that to mind.
Oh, yes, there's a lot of that. It's tricky business. And so much abuse. And every now and then they catch somebody abusing women. And then it gets to be a national story and shame for one person, but it just goes on all the time. It's very interesting. That's the whole man-woman thing is in there. I'm reading a very interesting book called Women Looking at Men Looking at Women. And has a whole long, long chapter about these issues.
About what? Could you repeat that sentence?
It's called...
No, I heard that part. When you turned to Judaism.
It has a long chapter on these very issues about how people manipulate other people using sexuality. Many different ways, and misusing it, and using it to overpower, which we've seen recently also, a lot of ways. It's a very old story.
I just think it's a huge elephant that sits in the room.
Yes.
Because it, I think it's one of the most beautiful expressions of us being human beings. And it's also something that, as old as I get, I'm still shocked by how people abuse it in the most criminal, the most horrifying ways. So we have this enormous spectrum of behavior and ways of being a human being around this subject.
Yeah.
From an absolute hell realm to something that's just as so beautiful. I mean, this is how we get into this world. So it is.
Yeah, it's like that. And who knows why? Nobody knows.
Aren't all the advertisements like that?
30 seconds.
30 seconds.
I guess I don't need to find a watch.
Do you have a moment to tell us about how Saturday was?
Oh, it was lovely. It was really nice. We had two vases, and Wendy brought beautiful purple tulips and yellow daffodils, marvelous mix of colors, and put them in the back of the room. And then we lined up and just took a flower and offered it at the altar and bowed and gave whatever to give to the universe and to all suffering. And then just kept going around and around, and we chanted the Heart Sutra about three times? Three or four times. Yeah. Yeah, it was very nice. Very simple. Yeah. So we have a business meeting tonight, so we should really sort of get cracking, shouldn't we? change the subject.
This Sunday, Angie will be giving a Dharma talk at
Jukoji. Yes.
Followed, I'm not sure at what time, a Jukai ceremony for Ying. Some of you might know her.
I think the talk is at 11:15 or 11:30, something around there.
Yes.
Has she sat with us?
A few times, and she was more frequent at Sashin. She's lived off and on at Jokoji. But whether you're a friend or not, it's just... It's a very moving experience to take vows with someone else.
Yes, everybody takes the precepts when you go. Everybody.
Yes.
She's very big with child, so it's
how far?
I think it's due in June. She's a little bitty thing.
Gemini.
Yeah. Anything else?